a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Call to order for Senate Commerce and Energy Committee. Very quick, we want to greet everyone listening over the internet. We want to remind everyone to turn off their phones. And also, please remember to sign in if you're going to testify on any of the bills. With that, we'd like to introduce one of our pages who is sitting there saying, please don't talk to me, but come on up and tell us who you are and let's say what you're going to go to school for and what would be another one? And your and what's your favorite color?
The elf. I'm Katie Roth. I'm from Sturgis. And after high school, I plan to attend the University of Minnesota and hopefully study law. And my favorite color, to toss it between coral and turquoise.
So we're expecting a little splash of coral and or turquoise next week, okay?
Okay.
Okay. If you see some of these silly senators wearing bow ties, you know you can get away with anything up here. Okay, with that, the secretary will please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Here.
Buell?
Here.
Jensen?
Here.
Johnston?
Here.
Maher?
Here.
Lederman?
Here.
Pauline, there is
here.
A quorum.
There's a quorum. With that, the chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes of last meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. We are going to have a slight change of order. Just real quick, we are going. Senator Lederman is the prime sponsor on Senate Bill 242, and he asked that he is able to take his bill right away so that he can attend to some business in local government. So, Senator Lederman, Senate Bill 242 is an act to increase the number of video lottery machines that may be placed in a licensed establishment. Any proponent testimony?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say that I've seen how well Norm Lingle and the Video Lottery Commission have worked together, and I really want to see this happen on this bill next year. When we had some of the other bills that came through earlier, specifically Senate Bill 52, it's good to see industry working with government when we have a public-private partnership in getting bills passed. And I would hope that in next session we can address the bill that's in the content in 242. And with that, I would ask one of the members to please table this bill so we can have this discussion next year. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnston.
Entertain a tabling motion for Senate Bill 242.
Motion is to table Senate Bill 242, moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any comment on that? With that... Oh, sorry. Yes, sorry. With that, the secretary will please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Pauline.
Aye.
Unanimous.
It's unanimous. Senate Bill 242 is thereby tabled. We will then go to the top of the calendar and work our way down. The next order of business on our docket is to confirm the governor's appointment of Brent Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission. And we will actually go... we have testimony on behalf of three appointees to the Lottery Commission. So I'll read them off in order. So confirm the governor's appointment of Brent Dykstra, Roger Novotny, and Charles Turbeville, all to the South Dakota Lottery Commission. What we're going to do is we're going to allow proponent testimony on all three nominations. Then we will take each in order of business. So with that, any proponent testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Senate Commerce Committee. Norm Lingle, Executive Director of South Dakota Lottery. I will be speaking on behalf of the three confirmations of the appointments that are before you today, and I appreciate the kind words that Senator Lederman gave to the lottery as well as to the commission, and these three folks are a critical piece to that. I'll start with Brent Dykstra. Commissioner Dykstra is a resident of Pierre, South Dakota. received his undergrad and graduate degrees from Northern State University. Brent has been in the banking business for the last 37 years, serving as president and CEO of the First National Bank of Pierre for over 25 years. Commissioner Dykstra has also served on the Aeronautics Commission, various South Dakota Bankers Association committees, numerous bank boards, and is currently also on the South Dakota Housing Development Authority board. Moving on to Commissioner Novotny. Commissioner Novotny is a native of Lake Andy, South Dakota, graduate of Northern State University. Commissioner Novotny has worked with the Department of Revenue for 23 years, worked at the Department of Revenue, I should say, for 23 years, serving in various managerial capacities, including the Director of Business Tax Division for over a decade. Commissioner Novotny has also served as an executive for Ammon Collection Services in Wells Fargo Financial in Aberdeen, South Dakota, as well as being the director of the South Dakota Division of Banking from 2004 to 2011. Commissioner Novotny has served on various board of directors for the Conference of State Bank Supervisors. He's a member of the Fort Pierre Planning and Zoning Commission, also a member of the Pierre Fort Pierre Rotary Service Club. And then last but certainly not least, Commissioner Turbeville. Commissioner Turbeville is a native of Newell, South Dakota, resident of Deadwood for the past 15 years. He's attended University of South Dakota as well as Black Hills State University, served in the military over in Vietnam as a platoon leader. Worked at various positions within the state of South Dakota, including the Governor's Office of Economic Development. Currently, he serves as the Executive Director of the Deadwood Lead Economic Development Corporation. And also, from 2004 to 2012, had the pleasure of serving as a state representative from that area. With that said, we certainly look forward to working with these folks on the South Dakota Lottery Commission, and I would ask for your advice and consent of the appointment of these three fine gentlemen to the South Dakota Lottery Commission, and would certainly stand by for any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you, Mr. Lingle. I think you can stay there for just a moment while I just see if there's any further proponent testimony. Because if there are any questions, I figure you don't need to go anywhere. So any further proponent testimony? Hearing none, we'll ask for any opponent testimony on any of those three nominations. Any opponents? Hearing none, we will close testimony and open it up for questions from the committee. Senator Maher.
Can you tell me, and I apologize for being naive, but I have no idea, what does the Lottery Commission even do?
The Lottery Commission, by statute, basically helps set the policy and direction for the South Dakota Lottery, approve major procurements, basically provides the oversight to the South Dakota Lottery as we move forward to keep the lottery a viable and sustainable source of revenue for the state of South Dakota.
Mr. Chairman? And is there salary provided for this?
They receive a stipend for each meeting they attend. I believe the fee is $75 per day plus expenses.
Okay. Thank you.
Any further questions? The chair has just one question. What, with the oversight and, let's say, guiding the direction, what kind of direction do you think these three men might wish to take the Lottery Commission, and or I know that you were gracious enough to come up early on in the session and kind of give us an overview, but wondering just what might be ahead for the Lottery Commission.
You know, certainly I'll try to give you a succinct answer to that. The current makeup of the Lottery Commission has a lot of very smart, successful, knowledgeable individuals that comprise that board. They They have a good feeling for the lottery industry as a whole. They are challenging the lottery to be as efficient and practicable as possible. And one of the major things that they just recently undertook, you've heard mention of it, is the strategic plan that the commission prepared and formally adopted in September. It was a result of a meeting from May of 2012. You will see the primary focus of that strategic plan as it sits now is on video lottery, but this is going to become an annual event where we sit down with these folks over a couple days, and this year we're also going to work to incorporate it, the instant or scratch tickets as well as the online or the lotto games into the strategic plan and really help focus us and drive us in a positive direction.
Chair has another question. I know former Representative Turbeville, and I don't know for certain if he has any, let's say, gaming institutions. I believe he does. And I'm just wondering if Mr. Dykstra and Mr. Novotny, what's it? Well, let's say establishments with video lottery in them. I'm just wondering if Mr. Novotny and Mr. Dykstra have any direct connection with this?
Mr. Chairman, to serve on the commission, you cannot be a licensee of the South Dakota Lottery. So none of the three appointments that are before you today have any direct involvement in any of the lottery products. They are not licensees of the South Dakota Lottery, and in fact, by them serving on the Lottery Commission, they, as well as anybody over the age of 18 that reside within their household, are prohibited from playing any of the lottery games.
All right. They can't even play.
They cool. can't even play.
Not even the penny slots that we approved earlier this session. Senator Bogalka, do you have a question?
Can those under 18 play?
No.
One final question. What's up with this Northern State University connection between Dykstra and Novotny? I mean, I'm seeing some tight... one graduated in 70 from NSU and the other from 71, so thank you very much. I'm sensing some sort of black helicopter conspiracy, aren't you? Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lingle.
Thank you.
With that, we'll open it up for discussion and or action from the committee. We will move in order. The first confirmation is the appointment of Brent Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission. Yes, this is an advising consent motion for the appointment of Brent Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnston.
I move the advice and consent on the confirmation of Brent E. Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission.
Motion to advise and consent on the appointment of Brent Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Maher. Any discussion on that? Any other discussion? With that, the motion is, does Senate Commerce and Energy advise and consent on the confirmation of the governor's appointment of Brent Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission? All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Excuse.
Holeen?
Aye.
It is unanimous.
It is unanimous on motion for consent moved by Senator Maher, seconded by Senator Johnston. This is a voice vote. All those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The appointment of Brent Dykstra to the South Dakota Lottery Commission is moved and placed on the consent calendar. Next up for committee discussion and or action is does the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee advise and consent on the confirmation of the governor's appointment of Roger Novotny to the South Dakota Lottery Commission?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Buell.
Advice and consent of Roger Novotny to the South Dakota Lottery Commission.
Second.
Motion is do advise and consent on Roger Novotny, moved by Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Johnston. Any comments? With that, all those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman? Excused. Holeen?
Aye.
Unanimous, yes.
Motion is unanimous.
Mr. Chair.
There is a motion for consent from Senator Buell, seconded by Senator Maher. This is a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The appointment of, or the motion of advising consent for Roger Novotny, the South Dakota Lottery Commission, is placed on the consent calendar. Next up for order,
Chairman.
Senator Maher.
Move for the advising consent of the appointment of Chuck Turberville to the South Dakota Lottery Commission.
Sorry. Beat me to it, so. That's all right, we can forgive that. Senator Maher moves the advising consent of the appointment of Charles Turberville to the South Dakota Lottery Commission, seconded by Senator Johnston. Any comment on that? Hearing none. The Secretary will please call the roll. All those in favor say aye. Opposed, nay.
Begalka.
Aye.
Buell.
Aye.
Jensen.
Aye.
Johnston.
Aye.
Maher.
Aye.
Lederman is excused. Holeen.
Aye.
Is unanimous.
Motion is unanimous. Senator Johnston.
Consent.
Move for consent on the appointment of Charles Turberville, moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Buell. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? With that, the nomination or the advice and consent for Charles Turberville to the South Dakota Lottery Commission is placed on the consent calendar. Thank you very much, committee, and thank you very much, Mr. Lingle, although there he is. Thank you very much. With that, we'll move on to the confirmation of the governor's reappointment of Tom Graham to the South Dakota Building Authority. Is there any proponent testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Don Templeton. I'm the Executive Secretary of the South Dakota Building Authority. Tom Graham's a resident of Sioux Falls. He's been on the Building Authority for 25 years. He's served as our chairman for nearly 20 years. We appreciate his commitment and hard work and his volunteer efforts in working with the Building Authority. In addition to that, Mr. Graham's president of Graham Tire Corporation and Graham Automotive Corporation. He's past president of Sioux Valley Hospital Foundation, as it was called back when in the day. I believe it's called Sanford Health Foundation currently. Past president of the YMCA Board of Directors, that would be in Sioux Falls. Past president of the Howard Wood Dakota Relays. Past president of Credit Bureau of Sioux Falls. Current chairman of our Educational Enhancement Funding Corporation. And I would recommend his confirmation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony? Any further proponents? I'll have you stick around for just a second. Any opponents? Hearing none, we'll open it up for questions from the committee. Senator Maher.
Can you outline what the purpose of the South Dakota Building Authority, what's the purpose of this board, and what their objectives are?
Yes, sir. We issue bonds for state building projects. Some examples would be the Dakota Dome roof replacement, Custer State Park improvements, Human Services Center like the Mickelson Building down in Yankton, and then legislature recently approved the dietary addition, and we bonded for that.
I'm guessing Senator Maher probably voted against that one. Okay, yeah, I think so. Any further questions from the committee? Hearing none, sit. Thank you for that. And we'll open it up for discussion and or action from the committee on whether or not the, well, we'll just say discussion and or action. Senator Johnston.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the advising consent on the reappointment of Tom Graham to the South Dakota Building Authority.
The motion is that the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee does confirm or does advise and consent on the confirmation or reappointment of Tom Graham to the Building Authority. Moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Begalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman's excused. Holeen?
Aye.
Is unanimous.
Motion is unanimous. Senator Johnston.
Mr. Chair, I move consent.
Motion motion for consent moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Maher. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. And this is a voice vote. So just all those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The Senate Commerce and Energy Committee does advise and consent on the reappointment of Tom Graham to the Building Authority and places it on the consent calendar. Thank you very much. With that, we'll move on to Senate Bill 73, an act to repeal certain provisions requiring wholesalers to purchase alcoholic beverages from brand owners' agents, or other wholesalers. Senator Maher is the prime sponsor, and he is a member of our committee, so we welcome one of our own.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Ryan Maher, District 28, which includes all of northwestern South Dakota, Harding, Perkins, Corson, Dewey, Zeebach, and Butte County. My intentions today, Mr. Chairman, are to eventually table this bill, but I want to make some comments before we do so and to give you some history and for the record to hold a certain business accountable to what we have agreed upon verbally. I had Senate Bill 73 essentially drafted last year, last session. I never filed it because at that time I had a verbal agreement with a company out there. And I'll give you a little impetus as to what's happened. Essentially in South Dakota, we heard this the other day with Senator Adelstein's bill. There's two primary liquor distributors, liquor wholesalers in the state of South Dakota, that being Johnson Brothers and Republic Beverage. The problem I was having last year, and in full disclosure, I own a restaurant and lounge on Main Street of Isabel. What was happening is Republic Beverage was in complete turmoil. They had been sold, they had been bought, their warehouses were being reorganized, and part of that fallout was that businesses in northwestern South Dakota were not receiving inventory properly. We couldn't get inventory. We were not being billed correctly. When you did put an inventory order in, it wouldn't come. If it did come, you got double ordered. Therefore, billing was all screwed up. What's interesting about the liquor industry is if you don't pay your bill, you're blacklisted with the Department of Revenue. And that stops all shipment of alcohol, even though, so if you're delinquent with a bill Republic, that precludes Johnson Brothers from delivering to your establishment too. So then you're in a really catch-22 because you're in a discrepancy, a dispute over a bill with Republic, but yet at the same time you can't get your inventory from Johnson Brothers. And so everybody was in quite a quagmire there for a while, and so I had essentially drafted Senate Bill 73. I had the verbal commitment of Republic at that time a year ago that they would try to do better and they would work to resolve this issue. Over the course of the year, I received better service. Because of my complaint, I started seeing a salesman regularly. My inventory shipments come regularly. Billing was fixed. The ordering process was simplified. Before all this, I used to have to call Rapid City. And then when they were going through this big turmoil, then Rapid City, nope, we can't take your order this week, so I have to call Sioux Falls. Sioux Falls, nope, we're not taking your order this week, so I have to call back to Rapid City. And so amongst five phone calls later, we could finally get an inventory put into place. After my threat last year of bringing this bill, my problem was fixed. However, all of northwestern South Dakota, that including primarily Harding and Perkins County, nothing changed. And so I brought this again this year, and this year I didn't ask any questions. I just filed the bill, and we got results. I had the new owner or a manager, overall manager for Republic Beverage, meet me at the Capitol a couple weeks ago on a Friday. I essentially told him that the ball is in his court. We were, it was up to him how we wanted to proceed with this. I wanted him to essentially get him the service that the people in Lemon deserved and Buffalo. And as of last Friday, I met with Republic representatives in Lemon on Friday afternoon, Friday morning. We met in Lemon. We went to every business owner. They were able to air their grievances. We set up a schedule as to when their orders will be taking place and when they can start expecting consistent deliveries, not just periodic deliveries or whenever Republic Beverage decides that they want to deliver to Lemon or Buffalo. And so we have a verbal commitment at this time, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I don't know who else might be here to testify on this bill, but it is my intentions to table this bill today. Thank you, members of the committee.
Okay. With that, we will open it up for further proponent testimony. Any further proponents? Hearing none, we'll open it up for opponent testimony. Hearing Hearing none, we'll open it up for discussion and or action from the committee. Senator Bogalko.
I actually have a question for the owner of Sparky's Bar, Isabel. I just read through the bill, and could you please tell us exactly what the bill intended to do?
Mr. Chairman, essentially what the bill would have done is right now we're required to go through a wholesaler to receive alcohol. And it's for the taxing purposes and for distribution. And there's exclusive agreements out there. Johnson Brothers cannot sell what Republic has and vice versa. Republic cannot sell what Johnson has. So what happened over the course of last year is at a higher level, at the manufacturing level, Republic Beverage took the contract away from Johnson Brothers to distribute the Black Velvet brands. Well, Republic now controls, I would say, 90% of the Canadian whiskey market. That being, Republic controls Lord Calvert, Windsor, Canadian Club, Jack Daniels, Jim Beam, and now Black Velvet, and so they, Lord Calvert, and I think I've repeated myself now. But anyway, the only thing that Johnson Brothers now distributes for Canadian whiskey is Crown Royal. And I can't go to Johnson Brothers, the company that was giving me a consistent and reliable service, and buy those other products. I am forced to go through Republic Beverage. And so had this law passed, it would have opened up a lot of chaos for both the liquor distributors in the state. So, and it would have provided essentially fair competition in my mind. Yeah.
Basically, he's an anarchist and wanted to capitalize on that for Sparky's. So, no. Actually, no. No, it was an interesting bill, and I'm glad that it was able to be worked out behind the scenes. So, with that, the chair will entertain a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I'll table my own bill. I'll shoot my own dog.
Okay.
Move to table, Senate Bill 73.
Motion is to table Senate Bill 73, moved by Senator Maher, and I think I heard a Senate second by over here by Senator Jensen. This is a non-debatable motion. All those in favor will say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalko?
No.
Beal?
Beal.
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman? Is excused. Holeen?
No.
Okay. 4 yes, 2 no, 1.
Just want to make Senator Maher squirm there. Okay, the motion to table is approved. Senate Bill 73 is tabled. Next on the docket is Senate Bill 111, an act to amend provisions of the Uniform Commercial Code relating to electronic funds transfers and to declare an emergency.
Good morning.
Any proponent testimony? Sorry, I should have said that.
Good morning, esteemed Senate Commerce and Energy Committee. I am Deb Soholt, a senator from District 14, which is southeast Sioux Falls. And I'm bringing to you today Senate Bill 111 on behalf of, because of an issue, actually, a problem that exists within the banking community. And this is an act to amend the provisions of the Uniform Commercial Code relating to electronic funds transfer. When Congress passed Dodd-Frank bill, which was Wall Street reform, in 2010, it affected the banking community and the users of banking services in a huge way. Dodd-Frank created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau and that agency, which I will refer to as the CFPB, and has proposed federal regulations for remittance transfers, which are the electronic transfer of funds requested by a consumer to a person located in a foreign country that is initiated by a person or a financial institution that provides remittance for a consumer in the normal course of business. This was to become effective in 2013, and the implementation date was to be February 7th. On January 22nd, the CFPB delayed the date. The delayed implementation was to give the Uniform Law Commission and or interested parties time to make changes that would permit some aspects of the remittance transfers to continue to be covered by UCC in Article 4A. So what has happened is that there is a vacuum in how certain transactions would happen in relationship to remittance transfers in what happened with Dodd-Frank. And now I would like to turn over for further testimony on this to Brett Kennecke on behalf of the bankers.
Thank you very much.
Stand by for any questions.
Thank you very much. Any further proponents? Ben.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Brett Kennecke. I'm a lawyer from Peer and a registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Bankers Association. And I'd like to say thank you to Senator Soholt for agreeing to be the prime sponsor on this legislation. This is coming from the Uniform Law Commissioners, the same people that bring us bills generally every year having to do with matters of state jurisdiction, but for which there are reasons for uniformity amongst the states. I generally think of the Uniform Commercial Code as being the most important of those, and not necessarily because it's in my client's purview, but because it has become part of the fabric of the law in many ways. So Article 4A, then, is where we're seeking to have an amendment and to remain in uniformity with other states. As of last week, California, New York, and Ohio had passed this very amendment. And so states that are considering this year include then Alaska, District of Columbia, Hawaii, Indiana, Nebraska, New Jersey, North Dakota, Pennsylvania, South Dakota, and Virginia. So this is going on across the country right now. It's brought because people at the Uniform Laws Commission noticed that when Dodd-Frank was passed, the resulting changes to remittance transfers, which are out-of-country money transfers, people sending money from here to another country without passing this bill, those transfers, were there to be disputes, well, there'd be a vacuum in the law. There'd be no federal law which applied and no state law which applied. And so if there was a dispute as to where the money went, who got it, what was done with it, the court, having jurisdiction over a dispute over that, would have no law to apply. And so this bill, 111, doesn't pick winners and losers. It just tells the court it might be the Electronic Funds Transfers Act, which is a federal law, or it might be state law, depending on what the facts and circumstances were. But 111 will put us in uniformity with everyone else and give courts a chance to decide a dispute should one arise. There's an emergency clause on this bill, and as Senator Soholt said originally, those rules were to be implemented on February 7th. It was my position, the position of the Bankers Association, if we're going to fix this, we just will fix it right and have it be in effect as quickly as we reasonably can. I think last week or the week before then, they delayed the implementation to a date uncertain. I don't know when that's going to be. It might be before July 1st. It might be afterward. I would ask you to go ahead and pass this with the emergency clause on it. Going back to my original point, if we're going to fix this, we just as well have it in effect from the time that it's been passed and put forward. I have no thoughts that anyone's going to use this legislation. I don't know that anybody ever has, but uniformity is extremely important to my client, the Bankers Association. There's a lot of good reasons why the Uniform Commercial Code is to be kept uniform, and so we would ask you to go ahead and pass this bill today and send it out. If you've got questions, I'll be glad to try and answer them. It's capable of being unbundled. It might take some time, and I'll be glad to try. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further proponent testimony on Senate Bill 111? Any further proponents? Hearing none, we'll open it up for opponent testimony. Any opponents on 111? Hearing none, we'll open it up for questions from the committee. Senator Buell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for Mr. Kennecke? Just so I'm understanding properly, I understand that there's some uncertainty at the federal level. If we do pass this with that emergency clause on there and they do happen to act before July 1st, this doesn't throw a wrench into things or anything like that, does it?
Thank you for the question, Senator. No, I don't believe so. I think we're acting as best we can, given the knowledge that session might be over and you might go home before the final rule gets put in place. I don't believe that changes are intended or anticipated to the final rule, but that they have delayed implementation in order for legislatures in other states to catch up and fill this hole. That's my understanding of what they said from their website. They're temporarily delaying. In order to give people a chance to react and respond. This was discovered sometime in 2012 after Dodd-Frank had been passed, and so I think we're acting appropriately.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Hearing none, we'll open it up for discussion and or action from the committee. Senator Johnston.
I move do pass.
Motion of do pass moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Jensen. Any comment on that? The chair will actually comment. I ran a business where I did a lot of international money transfers for a long time, and I'm glad that I didn't have to read Dodd-Frank to find this. With that, the motion is do pass, moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Jensen. All those in favor, please say aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Pagulka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman's excused, and Holeen?
Aye.
Is unanimous, six.
It is unanimous. It has an emergency clause, so we cannot place it on consent. So, Senator Soholt, we will see you on the floor on probably Tuesday. So, thank you very much. With that, Senate Bill 111 is moved to the floor with a due pass motion. Senate Bill, next on the docket is Senate Bill 226, an act to support Governor Mickelson's Pick-Sloan settlement framework. We do have Senator Lucas in the House. Thank you very much. Senator Lucas is the Senate Prime, and we welcome him to Senate Commerce and Energy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Commerce and Energy Committee. I bring to you Senate Bill 226 today to ask that we take some time to study former Governor Mickelson's plan that South Dakota be adequately compensated for the Pick-Sloan Missouri River dams that are built in South Dakota. I have some people that want to present some testimony in regard to this. Are we getting our fair share of electricity, hydroelectricity from the dams? Do we need to build more line capacity? One thing that I have a concern of that's probably not in here is the siltation, and that's obviously as the dams silt in more, that's going to reduce the capacity over years for producing hydroelectricity. So I have I'm in the Ag Committee there, and we got these uranium bills up. I do need to get back there, so I'm going to turn it over to other people to testify on this, if that's all right.
That is acceptable. Since you have to leave, we will say, does anyone on the committee have a question specifically for Senator Lucas?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Lucas. With that, we'll ask for any further proponent testimony.
My name is John Zyko. I work as a renewable energy consultant, specifically focused towards wind and water. Thank you for this opportunity to present testimony for the support of the Senate Bill 226. You should have a handout. I'll walk through the handout with you regarding the Missouri River Cost Recovery Authority that was completed in 1989. This was requested by former Governor George S. Mickelson. If you could turn to the first page, which is noted as number 5. In it, the Missouri River Cost Recovery Authority reported to the governor through a commission of 9 members, the concepts and objectives, and I'd like to point out that their work had resulted through the legislature in and around the time period of 87, became codified law. The purpose of the Governor Mickelson's water initiative is to ensure that South Dakota shares equitably in the Pick-Sloan program, which was in the time period of 1944. Some of the steps, as you will note, there are 5 points, and the directives that I want to basically focus in on deals with the improvement of our capacity to generate electricity with the hydro dams that came about and evolved from the 44 Pick-Sloan program. on page 6, if you would turn to that second page of the... It states that the state must move forward with the settlement package in a careful and deliberate manner to avoid adverse effects on South Dakota power consumers. And as you probably have realized or come to realize, that that is a common thing within the power structure and the cost factor to the users, the citizens of South Dakota, is constantly going up. While we have come to realize that our generation capacity through the decline of the water levels that are being discharged through the hydro dams, and most recently we went through a decade, or a little over a decade of fluctuation. From 2000 to 2008, we, as a state, had gone through a drought period where the dam levels were extremely low, causing and forcing the cost of our utility rates to go up, primarily because of the fact that the passing on of the dollars from purchasing on the spot market, because of the low levels, they had to go out, and when I say they, WAPA, and there is another partner, Basin Electric, had to purchase on the spot market, which cost the taxpayers $1.5 billion in cost. And in 2009, we started seeing the dam levels rise, and that put them in a position of saying, we can finally start generating and getting away from the cost factor that was driving the, into the red. And then came 10, and unfortunately they had the dams at a very high capacity without doing adequate release. And then with the excessive snow melt and from the packs in the mountains and the unfortunate situation of an extreme rain in Montana, it caused us to go through quite a period of flooding, which I think we all in some way or another have been impacted. If at the time within this study and settlement, we'll come to a point where the governor at that time was trying to achieve the implementation of efficient, more efficient generators, turbines. That would have, the purpose was to be able to acquire a 20% increase in the generation of the, from those generators. Keep in mind that the current generators, for the most part, are approximately 50 years in age. Now they do, the Corps of Engineers, on a week basis, biannually, they shut down the turbines and they do the maintenance and repair work to them. So in a way of describing this, we're basically looking at trying to upgrade to a hybrid that would give the generation of electricity a 20% increase. When basically it comes down to a situation of getting more out of less, more electricity being generated with less water flow. I'll return back to the report. On page 7, you will note that the South Dakota has suffered several billion dollars in damages and foregone economic activity as a direct result of the PIXLN program. $1.1 billion in foregone economic activity. Throughout the actual report itself is 42 pages in length, and it is quite staggering as to the dollar amounts. As you, that's what I'm trying to point out in some of these illustrations. $60 million per year in foregone economic activity resulting from the federalization of opportunities to produce hydropower on the Missouri River. You have $75 million in bank erosion damages, $35 million in fish and wildlife and other environmental damages. So the opportunities to come back to this particular document and what the potential is, given the fact that as a state we're looking at a great deal of difficulties in providing for our educational programs, the revenue from the enhancement and opportunities to utilize this agreement would help greatly towards educational programs. On page 8, it states the state should pursue a PICS loan settlement package. And then it goes on to address several other possibilities of making our state more efficient in utilizing its water. The state of Nebraska went heavily into irrigation, and they have reaped the benefits of millions of acres of irrigation, where in South Dakota we do very little of that. Now, I'm not proposing to enter into an enhancement program of our irrigation, but a study on page 10, you'll see underlined long-term objectives, which include future irrigation and hydropower projects. And through hydropower projects, I'd have to say that you have to look at turbines and transmission lines. The transmission issue is something that I'm sure most all of you have heard about in one way or another, regarding selling our potential wind that we have in South Dakota. We're the fourth best state in capacity, second in quality. Unfortunately, as you travel, you notice our neighboring states, even though they have abundant wealth in mineral rights, such as Wyoming and coal and oil, they're heavily investing both in transmission and in wind generation. Minnesota and Iowa is a stellar example of developing their wind, and the ripple effects from those dollars, especially into their school systems, is just phenomenal. Through visits that I've had with some of the principals and business office managers of those school districts. Continuing on page 10, you'll see the second underlined category, Missouri River Cost Recovery Authority. Back at that time, Senate Bill 138 established the Missouri River Cost Recovery Authority to evaluate, analyze, and recommend options, including but not limited to state-financed upgrading of PICS loan hydropower generation facilities. Again, the upgrading touches on the turbines, but as you increase the efficiency of the turbines, you're going to have to look at what's going to transfer it, what kind of capacity are on the transmission lines. And as it stands right now, we're being told as developers and consultants that the steel lines that you see leaving the hydro dams are full, and that is preventing those landowners that provided the right-of-way and the easements back into the 60s to have those power lines built on their lands, the farmlands, not to be able to tap in on that. The alternative is to have to build substations, meaning out-of-pocket for those developers. Now, when you take a look at the situation in the other states, you have to ask yourself, well, what is wrong with our situation? The picture as far as our development. We have the better winds in most of the states around us, with the exception of North Dakota. And they seem to have no problem with building the transmission lines. So you have to look at what are they utilizing as far as sources to do such. It's a pretty well-known fact that you're talking about millions of dollars in building such facilities. But it's a discouragement to the developers that come to South Dakota. They are We have the great enticements as far as tax incentives. We do a lot of the good up front to get them to come out, but they look around and they basically see lines that are there, or they're told they're full. They don't wish to rebuild our entire infrastructure as a company on a company-to-company basis, because the feeling would be we don't own it. You can't very well pack it up and take it with you at a later point in time. With the capabilities of this Senate Bill 138 that established the Missouri River Cost Recovery Act, I think there's some great potential there to start addressing that. Because my concern is that over time, too many come because of our enticements to take a look at our state, but they see very little or no change, so they go elsewhere. States that benefit, obviously Iowa, but Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, they're a breeding ground, if you will, for these types of projects because they have the ability to quickly set up connectivity. They set up the wind farms. The key driver for that is the production tax credit that the federal government gives. Generally, it's been on a three-year basis, and that was difficult to work with. Just recently, it was extended for an 18-month period. So we're in that period of uncertainty as far as it was reduced from 3 years down to 1 year. And as we all know, the federal government is tightening its belts as far as what it's going to provide. So the concern is out there, and we're in a position of having to act and act relatively quickly. In this particular calendar year, with the extension of the tax credit, a lot of companies will be actively looking for opportunities to develop. So it would be, I think, a very misfortunate thing to have had all that work done by the vision and hard work of then-Governor Mickelson to set this up, and they realized not only from the hydro...
Mr. Chairman, can I interrupt for a second? I know this is a little unorthodox, but I'm going to ask Mr. Zyko a question.
Let the chair ask Mr. Zyko a question. How much longer are you going to be?
Not much longer.
Like how much?
5 minutes, hopefully.
So I think I know what Senator Maher is going to ask, but the chair will allow some latitude here.
Mr. Zyko, I don't mean to cut you off in your testimony, but interest of our short day.
Sure.
I've got stuff to do because we have caucus at 12:30, and I know the other members of the committee do. With what you've been talking about, what is the goal of Senate Bill 226?
Well,
short and condensed.
Just to basically take a look at the opportunities that are provided that's already codified law, and to hopefully invoke those sections that have not been touched on. The entire authority and what it settled in on has many facets to it. Many of them, like Lewis and Clark Pipeline, et cetera, have been initiated and in progress. In many of your districts, there's a map of the water projects that are out there. But as far as the transmission, that probably would be the key component that needs to be looked at. And that could be done through a study. And there, I was just going to say there had been a study done by RMI at that particular time. That language might be in there, but it'd be worth looking into to see.
Mr. Zyko, I think the question is in front of this Senate Bill 226. What does it do? It just says an act to support. In what support? I mean, because if this is just to say that we agree with it, which I think I can say we all do.
Yes.
We agree with the intent. We agree with everything that you said. We like.
Okay.
We want to help South Dakota, but this bill doesn't appear to do anything. It appears that it should be more of a resolution, in which case we would all support it. But as far as an act to pass or not, I don't see where it does anything, in which case, it's a good intention, but we don't pass good intentions up here. We pass laws, and we're all in favor of the idea, but we need something that actually changes what South Dakota's plan is or anything like that.
Well, that's what I was just starting to touch on as far as what shortcomings we're having.
We understand the shortcomings. Right. We need to know what, either what this bill is going to do or what you would suggest doing.
Suggestions would be to utilize some revenues to possibly get the potential of a revolving fund initiated so that when landowners wish to participate in a pipeline project, be it a water pipeline, natural gas, there'd be some opportunity there. Of course, there are other types of pipelines. As far as helping landowners get, currently they can get up to 65% of funding from the federal government. 35% they're left on their own to try to figure out how to complete a project in a funding standpoint. This would be a small-scale type of activity where if a landowner wishes to provide the turbines, the electricity for that pipeline that's going through their property, they have that option. Banks will not fund them because of the nature of the equipment, meaning the transmission lines. They just don't wish to enter into that type of a negotiation. And it kind of leaves them without being able to do it. If we could find and establish an agency, and I think there are a couple out there in the ag community, would probably have to make some adjustments to their programs, nothing drastic. For example, a qualifier for wind turbines in what they call the value-added agriculture. Currently, that's not there.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt again, and we're not being rude, but we have to be respectful of the committee's time. Again, we're all in favor of these ideas, and if any one of those ideas were put in this bill, then we'd have some actual meat to this. But I don't see anything here. Like, as far as helping landowners with 65% federal funding, we can't touch that. But 35% funding, perhaps we could work with something to get, let's say, a business landowner right, where the state facilitates it. We're all looking for an area of economic development, and maybe this is it. Maybe this is a good idea. Maybe the state can facilitate that. Right. But again, that's not in this bill. We can't deal with something that we don't have language to read or to pass or codify. Yeah, we don't have an enabling act. I mean, it's just to say support. I mean, we could say that all we want, and it doesn't accomplish anything.
Are we reaching a point of discussing an amendment to it?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lederman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a motion to table so we can have further time to make this into a resolution. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But that's my intent after we end this. I think we can see a light at the end of the tunnel, and that's where I'd like to take this discussion.
And Mr. Zyko, for the sake of anyone here, a resolution is probably something I think that would receive very good support from the legislature. And what it is basically saying we as the state of South Dakota support this, and we want to pursue it further. And that would be like publicly stating it. And it's a way of basically using the language here as a resolution, but not as a law. Because quite honestly, I think this was drafted inappropriately. This is not a law. This is not an enabling act. There is nothing that is going on here. So I think that's what Senator Lederman is saying. So with that, for the sake of time, I will say, is there any further proponent testimony? Thank you very much. We do, I want to stress, we do agree with you.
Okay.
And we understand that there's a problem, and we up here do hear from energy, you know, like a lot of these people that you listed here, we talk with them on a daily basis, and we're trying to work with them to increase capacity and do these power lines and transmission lines. And the irrigation was a new thing that we don't deal with too much up here. It's more ag and natural resources, but it is something that would touch upon the dams and the dam water, and we would very much be interested in going forward with that. So with that, I will say thank you, but any further proponent testimony, knowing now where the committee is heading is, as far as this act goes, I will say the chair will ask if you support what Mr. Zyko said, just say we support that. And if you have any, let's say, specific ideas, we could say you can mention those and we can maybe move forward over the summer with either Senator Lucas or someone, some other interested party. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I won't take much of your time, but I just wanted to add a little bit onto this and noticing some of the...
You have to identify yourself.
Sorry.
Yeah. Sorry.
I'm Joel Kyleber. I'm a rancher from South Central South Dakota, and I've worked quite a bit. We've got 8 different wind projects ready to go in an IS study and stuff just south of Colombe there. There's some out in the Witten area. There's 150,000 acres north, and then you get into Gregory County with the pump storage project and wind. There's huge amount on development. South Dakota could be as efficient on wind as Wyoming and stuff is on coal if we would really, you know, get behind this. But to not take any more of your time up, I'm going to address this on issue that, you know, we've been through with Senator or with Secretary Bones up here at the Ag Department and stuff. And he's brought it up to the legislature a couple years ago to try to get funding for this James River drainage and stuff and all the cost we've got in the drainage district. And I noticed in this bill it does address that. It does have funding in for the drainage in the James River Valley. So, you know, it covers a big, broad area, and I think it's, you know, a resolution's a good way to go. I think it's a good thing for the legislature to really look into and try to get something going on some of these issues, because it does address a lot more issues on that. And I won't take up any more of your time. It's a lot different than what I was going to originally testify on and stuff, because I want to testify on just the economic development and the lack of it and the poverty in western South Dakota. I don't know how many of you really realize it, that every county in western South Dakota except the interstate counties and the counties in the tourism areas are in extreme poverty. And this issue hits a lot of these counties in the development on wind and stuff. And we could address that. We visited with Walt Bones, you know, a lot on how to get funding into townships, you know, for roads and stuff. And this is just a step forward to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. So thanks for your time.
No, thank you. And, yeah, I think the committee, we are aware, I think, like, of the top 10 most poverty-stricken counties in the nation. I think South Dakota has at least a handful of them, and yeah,
they're more.
So we definitely applaud where you're going with this. And
well, I got involved because, you know, you see all the kids grow up and leave. You know, my kids, they got grown up and left. You know, all my brothers and sisters. There's 9 of us. I think there's 2 of us in South Dakota.
Yeah.
You know, it just, we've got to start looking forward. And I looked at it as, okay, we're going to start getting federal tax dollars cut. Look at the dollars that we get subsidized in this state now. Where are we going to come up with them dollars for our roads and our education if we don't start investing in some of these projects to create the income?
Mm-hmm.
So, thanks for your time.
No, thank you. We do applaud that. Any further proponents?
Thank you for your time, committee. I'm Ron Horster, B&H Wind. We are developing a wind farm in southeastern South Dakota. The B&H stood for Bonholm and Hutchison. However, we're also in Douglas and Charles Vicks County with our development now. My comment will probably be more for if you go into a resolutions area. However, looking at wind power in South Dakota, if there's some federal funding available through the Pick Sloan plan, I would think that development of wind power would be the best win-win situation for both the state and the federal level. I guess what we're thinking from our situation and where we're at with our development, the problems we've had, if there's funding available, maybe it should be brought back into the companies on a grant basis. We have a tremendous amount of expense and time with the WAPA developments. I'm sure you have no idea all the process you need to go through to get connected to the power lines, but It is tremendous, and the cost is tremendous to do it. If there could be some kind of a grant reimbursement after the project was built, or maybe when it was engineered, if it could be available at the engineering time that it knew it could be built, it would cut down on the chasing so much capital to build the project, which would speed things up. Another thing with the dams, if we could get some type of a cooperation there, that the dams could work as a backup for the wind farms. It could cut down greatly on the amount of water they had to put through the dams. And a dam can start up real fast. If the wind is going down, you always have a little warning. Would be a perfect fit, be a real backup.
Thank you very much. Breaking with some of my own procedures here and offering discussion at the time, but I can honestly say that yesterday in a group that I was in our WIP group, we actually were talking about what could we possibly do with grant reimbursements and things like that to get some of these projects going in the state of South Dakota. Again, I just reiterate, I think all of us are in favor of such ideas to move forward. We're just trying to find the way to do it. You know, as always, it's the old bugaboo of where does the money come from? And we like the previous proponent testimony, which is perhaps this is something that we do to get the federal money coming in and things like that. And also with power lines, I can also say that in the first week up here, we actually had a briefing about the power line transmission and connectivity and things like that. So I guess I say that we are trying to move forward, and we applaud that it's coming also from private industry and not just up here, because that, I think, is the best way to move forward, is a connection between the two. So thank you very much.
Very good. And if there's any input we can help you with, we'd certainly appreciate doing that. Thank you.
Any further proponent testimony? Hearing none, we'll ask for opponents. Seeing none, we'll ask for any questions from the committee and or discussion.
Just a comment right now.
Mm-hmm.
And to the gentleman from Hutchinson Wind, I would direct your attention to Senate Bill 155.
And Senate Bill 195,
and
too. Is
somebody else talked to that one. I know more about 157 because it was in my Senate Tax Committee. And in 157, it outlines what the taxing structure is for wind currently, and there's a little tweak that's working its way through right now. But in the first 5 years of a wind farm coming online, the gross receipts tax of 3%, 90% of that is rebated back to the wind energy company to cover those costs.
Correct.
And so there is, and then what 157 is doing is tweaking that, trying to get some money to go to townships. And so I don't know if you're familiar with Senate Bill 157 at all at this time or not, but.
I haven't studied that
one. Okay.
Following 195 real quick.
Okay. All right. Great. And I'll let somebody else maybe address the concerns of 195.
Senator Johnston.
I don't necessarily want to address the concerns of 195, but I also...
That's all right. Open discussion.
Where are we at in the process?
Open mic. Questions. It's open mic night
all
right now.
Great. I'm looking in some specifics, you know, especially from roads. We've got Senate Bill 155, an act to establish a local government road improvement grant fund for the purposes of serving new agricultural facilities and to make an appropriation. Now, those are some more specifics. I heard roads two or three times. I was personally involved in that one. So, and then Senate Bill 192, an act to establish tax incentives for economic development. So there, Senate Bill 178, to enhance animal and livestock sustainability. So there's a lot of different activities going on that are specific to some of the opportunities that you lay out, but these are more specific and all kind of done collaboratively. So there is a lot actually going on that's much more germane to the direct topics we're describing.
But the chair will also say that we thank you for, because in all of this discussion, we haven't really addressed a lot of the Missouri River aspect of it and the Pick-Sloan Agreement and things like that, so maybe that's something we should be bringing into the discussion going forward as well. Any further discussion from the committee?
It's kind of difficult.
Senator Maher?
The prime sponsor here, but...
The chair is going
to see this as somehow be hoghouse into like a Senate joint resolution of some sort. And I don't know, but without the prime here, I'm not
going to. What the chair is going to do is I'm going to ask for a tabling motion. I'm going to ask for a tabling resolution, which basically puts this aside for the moment, and then I'm going to go and talk with Senator Lucas to see what he wants to do going forward, because he can hoghouse it into something with an actual proposal, or he can turn it into a joint resolution if he wants to, saying that we agree with the idea of the Pick-Sloan, or an actual idea for economic development if he had one of those. So, I will find him today and ask him what he wants to do, and if you would like to give him a call, I think he is your senator, I know, and you can say where your desires would be. Also knowing, and I do know Senator Lucas, I know that he's on top of a lot of these bills that we discussed and is aware of what a lot of these moving parts are. So that's what the chair is going to ask for, a tabling motion, so that we have time to talk with Senator Lucas about what he would like to do with Senate Bill 226. Any further discussion? With that, the chair is looking for a motion. Senator Lederman.
table.
Senator Lederman moves to table and seconded by Senator Johnston. All those in favor, any discussion on that? Yeah, all those in favor will say, oh yeah, no, sorry. All those in favor will say aye, opposed nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Bogalka?
Aye.
Buell?
Aye.
Jensen?
Aye.
Johnston?
Aye.
Maher?
Aye.
Lederman?
Aye.
Holleen?
Aye.
Is unanimous.
It is unanimous. So Senate Bill 226 is thereby tabled for the time being. It is not dead, however, so thank you very much for coming. We do appreciate that. With that, we are done with our business, and the chair will say, remind you to leave your binders behind and entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Moved by Senator Johnston, seconded by Senator Lederman. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? We are hereby adjourned. Thank you.